morning, according to Verizon. It is 9 o'clock, so we will welcome everybody to the July 3rd, 2019 meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District. We are going to start with our Pledge of Allegiance. It is the eve of the 243rd birthday of our nation, so Jeff Wall, would you be so kind as to lead us this morning?
Sure will. Please sign in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any public speakers wishing to speak on a subject not on the agenda this morning?
Not this morning.
Very good. Thank you for that. With that, we are going to start today with a public hearing. This is the time and place to set a duly noticed public hearing regarding the adoption of a resolution establishing schedules of water standby assessment and sewage and waste standby charges for the fiscal year 2019-2020. I will declare the public hearing open and ask for a staff report at this time. Good morning.
Good morning, board members. My name is Juan Gonzalez. I serve as the district mapping administrator, and I'd like to provide your board with a brief overview of standby. The district first initiated its water standby program in 1966. It has expanded to include general district and 16 water improvement districts. The sewage and waste service standby charge, which was initiated in 1968, has also expanded to include 20 improvement districts. Recognizing that the standby program is fairly complex, staff has developed answers to frequently asked questions and posted it on the district's webpage as a resource to the public. I have a screenshot of that page for your review. As you can see, it includes questions such as, what is standby? Who is charged? And how are fees calculated? Additionally, Public and Governmental Affairs will be adding a brief standby explanation to the water bill when property taxes are due twice a year. We hope this will help explain standby program to property owners within our district. Standby assessments have been carefully reviewed and found to comply with the provisions of Proposition 218 because they were in existence before November 6, 1996. And are used exclusively to finance capital costs and maintenance and operation expenses for water and sewer systems. As in the past, these assessments will be added to the county property tax roll and will be collected annually. Last fiscal year, approximately $5.9 million were collected for the district standby assessments. I would be happy to take any questions that the board may have.
Any questions from the board? I will just register my usual, I do not like the word standby, but that's verbiage. But I am extremely pleased that we have done this and saw it on the website. I think this will be great help at tax time to our customers who see that on their property tax bill, and I'm sure we get some calls of what is a standby fee. So I am extremely glad that we have moved in this direction. If we could ever come up with a new word for standby, that would please me. But for now, I think this does it. So thank you. Great job with that.
Thank you, Director. I want to also thank our Public Affairs and Engineering Services for providing us with this website page. Thank you.
Very good. With that, I would ask the Board Secretary how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on June 10th and June 29th, 2019. In the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the district service area. Additionally, a notice of hearing was posted in the office of the district.
Very good. If the Secretary of Board has received any written protest to the proposal, would I ask her to provide copies to the board at this time?
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Very good. At this time, are there any members of the public that wish to speak on this matter? If so, please make yourself known and come forth to the podium. I do not see any speakers. So at this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolution. the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District electing to adopt a resolution establishing schedules of water standby assessment and sewage and waste standby charges for the fiscal year 2019-2020. Is there a motion for this resolution?
I move adoption.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The motion passes with Director Sullivan absent. The resolution has been adopted. At this time, I guess we can close the hearing. Correct, Mr. Legal Counsel?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you for that. With that, we will move on to the General Manager's Report. Mr. Jones.
Good morning, Vice President Pauley, members of the board. My written report's included in your package. A couple things I want to update the board on. The State Department of Drinking Water is proposing a reduction in the notification and agency response level for perfluorooctanoic acid, or PFOA, and perfluorooctane sulfonate, or PFOS. And we've had a discussion about PFOAs and PFOSs before. As you know, they are present in some of our wells, particularly around the March Air Reserve Base, and we've been interfacing with the Air Force on the mitigation of that. But recently, this has been a kind of a change in state policy. The Department of Drinking Water has indicated that on July 8th, they intend to substantially reduce both the notification level, the public notification level, from 14 nanograms per liter to 5.1 nanograms per liter for PFOA, and from 13 nanograms per liter to 6.5 nanograms per liter for PFOS. And then similarly, they're indicated to lower the response level for PFOA and PFOS combined, which was 70 nanograms per liter combined, to response level for PFOA of 10 nanograms per liter and PFOS of 40 nanograms per liter. Now, just by background, the notification level is the level in which we are required, if this is present in our source water that we serve to the public, to notify all the public agencies in our service area, so that would be the cities, board supervisors, and so forth. Whereas the response level is the level in which the Department of Drinking Water recommends that you not serve the water to the public. Now, these are not regulations. They're not maximum contaminant levels, so it's a recommendation. But I think we all know if there's a notification level or a recommendation level, we're going to take those wells out, and we're not going to serve those in our service area, which is what we've chosen to do with the wells already prior to this around the March Air Reserve Base. Just by perspective, what is a nanogram per liter? It's part per trillion. And so if you think about it, that's one drop in 13 million gallons. So the 13 million gallons is 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So we're talking about one drop in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So it's a very, very trace amount. In fact, it's really kind of at the almost the bottom of the detection level. This would be actually the lowest, if implemented by the state, would be the lowest notification and response levels in the United States. So it's a fairly significant issue. We're working extensively with OCWD, with the associations, with our agencies. We're submitting letters to CalEPA requesting that they defer this for at least 90 days. Apparently, the basis for the notification level is a single rodent study that has not been peer-reviewed or reviewed by the agencies. And so there's real questions why the state is moving forward on this so quickly, given that their previous position was they were going to go through a more deliberative process before they reset these levels. Also, to give some perspective, there are certain areas in California, particularly Southern California, that are more impacted than our area potentially. In Orange County, and they've been following this for quite some time and focused on this, because, and they have a state-certified lab that can make tests for this, and they've put their own testing program in place. They have 39 of the 51 wells that they have tested would be affected by this. And they project if this went into place and all those wells were taken out of service, it would basically take about 100,000 acre feet of local production in Orange County out of service, 71 wells. So it's a fairly severe issue. Santa Clarita is another area that is severely impacted. Virtually all the wells would be affected in their service area. And unlike OCWD, they don't have a viable alternative supply. They can't turn on net water. The PFOA and PFOS is non-detect in net water. And we have been required just to sample some of our wells. We are now going to start sampling all of our wells. And moreover, what we are planning is a very comprehensive study session with our board on July 17th. Where we'll go over this very large topic. So this is a fairly significant issue, but again, we're working with our associates and the associations and our agencies in our service area and others to try to influence the outcome of this.
Just a quick question on that. What do you think has triggered this from the state?
Well, I think this has become kind of a national issue on PFOA and PFOS. There's been a number of announcements that basically these chemicals are found in human beings, in drinking water. Just as kind of background, I don't want to spoil our study session,
okay.
But they're ubiquitous throughout the environment. PFOA and PFOS are used for a variety of things. Gore-Tex, if you have a Gore-Tex jacket, that's coated. If you use Scotch-Guard, if there's fire foam, firefighting foam retardant, which is why we see it around the base where they did firefighting practice. And it's at such trace levels, it can basically get into the environment very easily. In fact, one of the things I found interesting, and there was a good presentation at SOPI yesterday by OCWD on some of the things, is there's a very strict testing protocol for even how samples are collected because it's so sensitive. So, for example, fast food is wrapped in paper. That paper has perfluorinated compounds in it. So those who go out and take the samples, A, can't be wearing clothes that are new and unwashed because the clothes have perfluorinated compounds. B, can't have touched fast food. Maybe for a number of reasons, but can't have touched fast food because of the paper. So, I mean, it just shows you how ubiquitous this is in the environment. And, you know, the bigger question is one, you know, or five parts per trillion in drinking water really the path in which people are getting this in their bodies and what is the real effect of this? So that's why I think we're asking for some more time on this, because this was a kind of a sudden change in policy by the state. Because, as I mentioned earlier, they had a multi-tier process where they were really going through and trying to evaluate this more deliberately. So I think they're just getting pressure from the environmental community.
Okay. Thank you.
So anyway, big topic, and we'll spend a lot of time on it at the next board meeting. We're looking forward to that. Additional past ongoing activities, I thought we had a very productive meeting yesterday with Fallbrook Public Utilities District and Rainbow Municipal Water District regarding their potential annexation into Eastern for wholesale water service. Directors Corona and Record participated in the meeting, as well as directors from those boards and their staff. We went through a proposed memorandum of understanding, which will outline the planning process and the terms for the annexation into Eastern. That'll kind of get the ball rolling. We discussed the coordination that's been ongoing with LAPCO and a number of other factors, but I think one of the questions that was answered fairly clearly in my mind was the level of commitment by those agencies to move forward with this. I felt from the meeting that they were very committed to this, and particularly their board members wanting to move forward with implementing this annexation. Along with that, on June 28th, we received a public records request from the San Diego County Water Authority. We're working with council on doing the document search that's required for that and communicating with the Water Authority on the responsive documents that we may have. So we have legal counsel working that already. We'll also be coordinating with Fallbrook and Rancho on their responsive documents that they've provided, because they also receive public records requests. On our groundwater replenishment activities, we've recharged to date this year about 6,400 acre feet of water. including 2,319 acre feet of Savova 7 redeliveries for 2020. With the 75% allocation on the state water project, and that's indicating that these deliveries are certainly going to continue throughout the calendar year. Just as a side note, the recharge ponds have been drained down right now before the 4th of July weekend because in previous years when we've had water in the ponds, we've had substantial trespassing and unauthorized recreational bathing, let's just say, in the ponds. So we're curtailing that this year by draining the ponds down. Our legislation, SB 414, cleared its first policy committee in the Assembly yesterday. There was a hearing on the bill in the Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials Committee. The bill passed out on a fairly slim vote, a 5-2 vote, with two of the committee members not voting. Assembly Member Melendez spoke out very strongly against the bill, unfortunately, and ultimately did not vote for the bill. Her concerns that she expressed were somewhat interesting. She expressed opposition to the bill because it would allow the new small system water authorities to basically issue revenue bonds without having a vote. She wanted them to be able to have a vote of their customers to issue bonds. I think we all know that's not very practical, and our agencies don't go through that process. But that was something she was fairly hung up on, and again, did not vote for the bill as a result of that. But the bill did get out. The bill is now scheduled for hearing in the Assembly of Local Government on July 10th. We continue to move forward. We are attempting to interface with the state board, who's expressed some concerns about the bill, and the governor's office to try to move this thing forward. We'll probably have more news on that, but we continue to move forward on the bill. I reported to the board previously that we would be getting a notification on our North Paris Groundwater Basin project for our Proposition 1 funding. Their staff had indicated to us that that was going to be released and we would be getting a board letter. They didn't say for how much. By the end of June, they did communicate back with us that those are now going to be delayed until mid-July. So we will know more later. Lastly, I want to talk about an item relating to the flooding that occurred on February 14th at the Temecula Valley plant. As you recall, we had a 100-year flood event, or larger, which resulted in water in Marietta Creek and the adjacent flood control facilities backing up into the plant property and flooding one of our electrical buildings. We had been in consultation with the city of Temecula regarding that, and the drainage facilities that were impacted that are adjacent to our property are on private property from the adjacent parcels, and the city said they have no responsibility for that, suggested that we work with those property owners. So Jeff has taken the lead on that. We put together a letter in consultation with legal counsel to the property owners. Those letters are going out or have gone out already. And then we are going to set up individual meetings with the property owners and take a more proactive role and say we'd like to work with them to see if we can coordinate activities to clear those channels and do those maintenance activities where possible. So I think what we're trying to do is take a more cooperative role with them. But we do need to get those channels cleared and the culverts cleared, and so we're going to try to work with those owners to do that. We do have an update on the insurance-related matter to that, and that's a closed session for today's board meeting. Are there any questions I can answer?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nick, do you have anything for us this morning?
I don't have anything to report.
Laura? Mr. Mawad?
Good morning. Just one item. As part of our water banking conjunctive use program, please inform you that we've advertised for construction bids the Mountain Avenue recharge facility. As you're aware, that project includes improvement of our 39-acre property in San Jacinto. That project was advertised on June 20th. The future estimate for construction is approximately $16 million. Bids are due on August 1st. Upon review of the bids received, we will be issuing a board recommendation for the board's consideration in more hours.
Thank you so much. Mr. Wall? Very good. With that, we will move on to our consent calendar. Do any members of the board have an item on the consent calendar they wish to pull or have a conflict with? Seeing none. Seeing none, Mr. Rickard moves the consent calendar. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Good. We have a first and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent calendar passes with Director Sullivan absent.
Director Pauly, on the next item, I need to abstain from item D, 5D. I have a potential conflict of interest in that. I've done work for the property owner.
Okay. Well, very good. When I get there, well, so noted. With that, the item, the action calendar, we will start with item A, which is to approve and authorize various contracts and agreements for the replacement of the district's customer information and billing system for an appropriation of $17,514,285. Good morning, Dan. Again, as I said yesterday, normally this kind of dollar sign would have Joe Mawad up at the podium. Good morning. I also noticed that we do have a staff from our customer service department over, senior staff this morning. I appreciate them coming over for this item. So I'm excited to hear about this. We had a great briefing yesterday at the admin committee. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Yes, we are very, very pleased to be here with this recommendation to advance our customer information and billing system replacement project. And, you know, typically I don't want to read from slides, but I think our strategic plan objective to provide superior customer service is very pertinent to this project. So that initiative is to implement industry-leading billing, communication, and other service deployment technologies that simplify and improve the customer's experience with EMWD while also improving efficiency. And that's really the basis of this project. The CIS replacement and our customer portal implementation are the epitome of that strategic plan objective. So we are here today to make this recommendation to the board. By way of background, as you know, we completed our AMI conversion back in May of this past year, so all 155,000 EMWD meters are now automated. We have also completed the CIS and customer portal selection process that was completed in March of 2019. We're now ready. We've budgeted for this project, and we're now ready to recommend moving forward with the implementation of the CIS replacement. So by way of background, I know you've seen this slide before in previous presentations, but I do think it's pertinent to the need here. The image there on the upper right is our existing coins billing application. That is a 27-year-old system. The system is paid its dues. I commend the IT staff, Mike, and his team for keeping this thing going and evolving through the rate changes and all the advancements that the district has made in the past 27 years. But we've really reached a roadblock in many areas and are able to advance our customer service initiatives here. This is the source of all EMWD billing and customer account information. Tremendous amount of record here. It's been highly customized to meet our new budget-based rates. You can imagine that 27 years ago, the rate structure that exists today was not even contemplated. And this system is responsible for $17 million per month in bill revenue. So this is a very important system to the district. So what are our challenges? Yeah, first and foremost, it's that lack of customer service, we don't have the ability to implement a robust customer portal. And we're going to show you a demonstration of what the recommended system will look like here shortly. You know, dated technologies with limited support resources, key staff members in the IT and customer service department have retired since the system was implemented, and those resources are lacking in the organization. The rate and budget-based adjustments to our rates are timely. It takes a considerable amount of programming and initiative to make adjustments in our billing. And antiquated business processes. The district has changed significantly in that period of time. We think we can leverage best and leading technology in moving our organization, our customer service activities forward. And as Charles will speak to in a moment, very complex screen navigation for customer support. We'll show you an image where the proposed landing page is on the new system is all of the customer information available to an agent before they even answer the call on one screen versus today what might take 10 to 15 screens to navigate to be able to assist a customer on the telephone. Very, very challenging technology. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Charles. He's going to walk through the process of how we got here, both in the system, the consulting resources, and our support that will be necessary to implement the project. So Charles Cannelli, our Director of Customer Service.
Thank you, Dan. One of the members of the board. So as you may remember, in December of 2017, the board approved a contract with AEC Utility Partners. And under the scope of service in that contract, AEC completed a comprehensive needs assessment and requirement analysis of the new system. They put together a preliminary project budget for this project, developed specifications and went into the RFP. Also were very involved in leading our efforts in the RFP process. They facilitated the selection phase of the system, which I'll be walking you through this morning. And finally, we're very involved in the contract negotiations with the CIS vendor that we've been seeking approval this morning. So in July of 2018, we released RFP 3064. This RFP was for CIS, Customer Self-Service Portal, Mobile Work Management and Implementation Services. Contained within this RFP are 2,500 very detailed requirements. Just to give you a level of the detail here, in the credit collection process, there are about 263 requirements for that function alone. Under the water budget, so about 130 requirements. So again, you know, very detailed in the requirements that were put in the RFP. Following the release in September of the same year, we received 9 proposals from the CIS vendor community. At which point, myself and the core team began the evaluation process and shortlisting those 9 proposals. So the table here shows you the initial score following that evaluation and shortlisting. You'll see Financial scored the highest, followed by Advanced Utilities, and lastly Vortex One, which is an SFP product. So once we identified the shortlist vendors, the next thing we wanted to do was to bring them back on site for 2.5 days each to complete demonstration sessions. And to give you an idea of some of the things that we were reviewing in that 2.5 days, we wanted to understand how system navigation is for the front-end users. We wanted to understand the rate management, the rate engine, reporting capabilities. Customer self-service call was a huge discussion that we had with the vendors. And then finally, the implementation and the technology that they were proposing, Michael and IT team were very involved in those discussions. So again, you know, very detailed in the demos to ensure that we were selecting the right product for the district. So following that phase of the evaluation, we finalized the scoring, and you see Cayenta again was top of the list, followed by Vertex and Advanced Utility came in third. So a little bit of background on who is Cayenta. Through the reference check, they provided really strong references to the district, and we spoke with the City of Roseville up north, who recently completed our Cayenta project, and they've been very happy with not only the implementation, but with the product thus far. And also the City of Provo up in Utah. We're currently in the implementation phase. We spoke with them just to understand how the process is going. We also completed site visits to Rancho and Helix Water District, and those visits affirmed our recommendation to the board here today. And it's had a long-term technology support experience, and they have 30 years of successful implementations. To date, they have 61 utilities using this CIS system. Through the process, we met with the leadership team to review their 10-year technology roadmap to really understand what is it that they're doing to ensure that the system is current, what is the upgrade timeline, and really gave us a good feel that they're really thinking about their customers on the 10-year roadmap. Cayenta has won awards such as the J.D. Power and Associates for Customer Service. And now listed on here, they've also won 2 Best CIS Implementation Awards at a yearly conference that we're attending called CIS Week. And my personal goal is to make that number 3 following our successful implementation. through their managed services that they provide. And so they're supporting, so the benefit of that is they will support the EWD through upgrades, which will ensure that we stay on the most current and supported platform as we engage and work along with Kayanta. And then finally, they integrate with third-party systems. Dan talked about the customer portal, which is through Silverblaze, and mobile work management for all the field folks who today use paper to complete their work orders. And that system is just Covest. So from a backend perspective, Kayanta's parent company is Harris Computer Corporation that employs over 4,000 employees in 105 locations across the globe. They're wholly owned subsidiary of the Constellation Software Incorporated, a larger group there with 13,000 employees with revenue of about 2.1 billion. They're very significant in the CIS presence. In the CIS market, they have 14 specific utility applications, and one such application is the current meter data management system. This is a system that communicates with the AMR meters, captures those reads and sends it to the CIS. That is the Harris product that the district is currently using today. And also another interesting fact is 3 out of the 9 proposals that we received as well also Harris products. So again, you know, they're very prominent in this CIS market. So as Dan mentioned, you know, here is a screen, the landing page that the customer service representatives will use. You know, to me, it's a far cry from that blue screen that Dan was previously talking about. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things here. On the top left here, you'll see, or try to see, the customer information, and we'll list the various services that are associated with that customer. So the benefit here is, from a customer service perspective, we can address all the accounts on that one screen as opposed to opening up multiple screens, which is what we do today in the current system. Over on this side, it shows the current charges on a very easy to follow and itemized screen. And what's really neat about this, on the really top right hand corner, you know, there are visual color cues, if you will, that draw the customer service representative's attention to things about the customer billing. And in this example, it's red because the customer is due for turn off. So that will really help the customer service representative pick up on the visual cues and direct the conversation accordingly. The system really integrates well with our phone system. And what's really neat about this is through the customer interacting with the phone system and providing information such as their account number, this screen will automatically pop up for the customer service representatives, which streamlines and improves on that customer experience right as the call is coming in. And then finally, just the transaction history, again, on a very easy to navigate screen. And really what was the selling point for us here is Kayanta, you know, tries to accomplish that 80-20, the call, 80% of what a customer service representative will need is about one screen, as opposed to, as Dan was mentioning, multiple screens, multiple tabs in the screen and in the system that we have today. So next is the what's facing the customer, right? So this is the customer portal through Silverblaze. They've been in business since 1999. And so through this system, customers will be able to view their bill, submit payments, analyze usage, which will in turn hopefully drive water conservation. Customers will be able to set notifications and receive alerts based on those preset notifications. And the system is mobile friendly. It works with Apple, Android, typical desktop computer, tablets. Excuse me. So it's a very powerful system. So at this point, we would like to play a short demo. If we get the mouse to work.
With the Silverblaze customer portal, you'll be able to supply your customers with second-to-none self-service access to the utility information with regular meter and smart meter consumption information. Your fully integrated and branded Silverblaze interface is simple and intuitive. Your customers can review their consumption details on any device, from desktop computers to tablets and smartphones. Now here it is in action. By selecting the Build Usage tab, customers can review their electricity usage and generation, water consumption, and gas usage. Details including temperature, humidity, and precipitation overlays are also available. There's an option to download usage history to a spreadsheet or subscribe to detailed usage reports via email. Customers can record events on their usage charts to show the impact on consumption and their bill. The Smart Meter tab provides details on their daily usage. Your customers simply select the date range they're interested in. It's here that they can review their usage charts, indicating when they used electricity, water, and gas during a selected time period. Clicking on a specific day, they can see a breakdown of how much electricity, water, and gas they used each hour. Usage Downloads is just that. It allows your customers to download their usage history in two formats, spreadsheet and green button. Recorded events from the Usage tab can be viewed in a chart on the Smart Meter tab. Clicking an event here will refresh the chart with focus on the selected event. So there you have it, SilverBlaze's customer usage at a glance. To learn more about the wealth of other features that SilverBlaze provides utilities, select an area of interest or schedule your personal demo today.
So that is the customer service portal. I hope you agree with me that that is a step in the right direction to get to be like Amazon. So once we had identified the system and gone through that whole process, we then shifted our focus to the product implementation. And one of the areas that we wanted to ensure that we had in place was a really strong implementation team with experience. So that's the key roles that we looked at, and I'll walk through them briefly here. So the lead project manager, their role is really to oversee the project and ensure that the project is adhering to the standard of working place, managing both internal and the vendor staff. Next role is organization change management. You know, as Dan talked about, you know, the current CIS system has been with us for 27 years. And when you really think about, you know, how ingrained that system is in our business process and the folks that use it, transitioning to a new system is a pretty heavy lift. So this role will be instrumental in ensuring that we transition the district from our current point system to the financial system successfully. Project quality assurance. This role will provide periodic assessment and provide feedback to the project leadership team on the district side, and also identify risks and provide input on how we can avert same risk as we move on the project. The training role and development will work really close with the organization change management role. And their responsibility is really to develop training material, coordinate internal training of staff, and make sure that everybody is ready to use this system before we push play. And then finally, the testing role. Also pretty significant role that will ensure that all functions are fully tested and working according to our expectations. And also assist in automating test scripts that will benefit from future upgrades and business process changes, which you know that will be those. So we released the request for qualifications for those five roles I just walked through, and we received six proposals. And as you'll see on the table here, AEC Utility Partners scored highest in four out of five roles, support manager, change management, system training, and testing. Plant Moran scored highest in project quality assurance, and we believe this is actually a benefit for our project. You know, having a third-party organization run quality assurance on our project, as opposed to the alternative, which would have been AC, self-QA, if you will. So we believe that this is actually a benefit for the project. And then lastly is project contract support. So the board might remember in our last CIS information update, we introduced the board to the core team, which is primarily made up of five customer service and billing representatives who will be 100% dedicated through the implementation phase of the project. So from a back billing perspective, we looked at third-party call center support that would handle 20% of the call volume that we handle today. So we released an RFP 3079 for project contract support. And in that RFP, we're asking for seamless transfer of calls to that third-party call center. We received 9 proposals from the call center community, and Optimum CX, as you see on the table here, scored the highest. So a little bit of background about that evaluation phase. You know, first and foremost, our goal was to ensure that the level of quality, the level of customer service that our customers are used to today from district staff are not compromised. And so as we walked through the evaluation phase, you know, those were some of the things I wanted to ensure that that Optimum does provide. So we conducted a site visit, myself, customer service manager and training coordinator who was here with us, and the IT manager went up to Reno, Nevada, where they have their 200-seat call center. We confirmed that their technology is secure and their facility is also secure. We met with the human resources director. We walked through the training and hiring methodology, the recruitment plans, and found that in some cases, pretty similar to what we're doing here. And what was also really neat to identify is that they do have water utility customer support that they're working on today. They're very scalable and flexible at providing various levels of support for the district as well. So from a mechanics perspective, our intent is to route calls based on complexity and call type. So these are the calls I'm calling the routine calls, customer calls that they'd like to update their phone number because they have a new cell phone or I have a new email. So those are the type of routine calls that will be routed over to this vendor. Calls related to reporting a payment and enrolling in our electronic billing system. Those are the routine calls that make up that 20% that they'll be handling. It's also important to note that the more complex call will be handled by our internal dedicated staff. And again, the transfer of calls to this vendor will be seamless, so really no impact to the customer. They will have a dedicated staff at the location. And typically what you find in this third-party services, their agents are what they call a shared pool. And we really didn't want that because, again, we want to maintain that level of quality with the calls. The leadership team, both Marlene and Nicole, who are here, will be very connected to the leadership team. We will review their quality assurance. We'll meet with them periodically, provide feedback, again, to ensure that that level of service is part of what we're doing here today. And we'll also set up an escalation route so that should they need to reach out to a supervisor, we will get a quick transfer call to our district supervisors for support. And so with that, I'd like to transition over to Dan, who will review the project budget with you, and then we'll open it up for questions.
So thank you, Charles. As you can tell, this project is no small lift. There are many components to this that we've been working on over the past year and a half to put together for each element of initiating a successful project. The systems that are involved here, the Kyanta system, the CIS, or the customer portal system, the mobile work management system, we're looking at a budget of $5.2 million for that, with license fees covering through 2021 of $431,000. The project support elements, that includes the various factors that Charles mentioned, the project manager, the training lead, the testing lead, the change management person, as well as individuals that will assist us in balancing between the existing COINS data and the new system to make sure that the customer bills are accurate and that the dollars balance and the usage balance is accurate as can be before go live. That's into this figure at $3.8 million. The project QA, again, we chose a third party, so it's another consulting firm that will come in and they'll provide periodic review of the project. The budget, the deliverables, any risks that are identified that provide management insight into the project health throughout, that's at $264,000. And then the project contract support, this is that offsite call center that we feel is necessary to maintain the level of service that we provide our customers throughout this two-year project. It's a two-year duration in order to achieve this goal. And 20% of our call volume and our resources are going to be dedicated 100% to this project. We feel it's important to utilize a third party to sustain our level of customer service during that time. And then lastly, the hardware IT services, servers, and various consultants to assist with the integrations. For example, there are currently over 20 integrations with the existing coin system. system, the existing billing system, with different applications throughout the district. Every one of those needs to be unwind and reconnected as applicable to this new system. They lived there, and we estimate approximately $1.5 million for that. With project contingency of a little over $1.5 million, our proposed budget is $13.6 million, all of those factors included. Labor or staffing that are dedicated to the project will also charge their time to this project for accounting and capitalization purposes. Based on staff's current rates and salaries, that figure is estimated at $3.8 million. Those are charges that would normally occur. These aren't new or additional. These are existing staff labor charges, but we'll apply them to that project for purposes of capitalization. So by way of project timeline, like I mentioned, it's a two-year initiative. With the board's approval, we hope to kick this effort off in this month, July. The first phase, we've promised for the past year and a half that our first phase deliverable will be the customer portal. That in January 2020, our customers will be able to view their usage, they'll be able to make payments utilizing that customer portal. And then CIS testing begins in earnest after all of the configuration and the integrations and setup has been initiated. May of 2020 is when we're looking at that testing process. That is a significant effort. That's a year-long effort of its own to ensure that the data has transferred correctly, that those balances are working correctly, that our rates are calculating appropriately. It's a big lift. And then end-user training begins near the end of the project. We want all of those configurations and that setup to be nearly complete by the time we begin training our staff in earnest. That's anticipated in January 2021, with the product go live in March of 2021. That would be when we initiate the transfer from the COINS system into this new application. COINS data will remain available to the district. But I guess the good thing about it being an in-house development system is we own it. There's no sense to delete everything. So we'll have that sitting there as backup and for historical reference should staff need it and to generate reports and that sort of thing going forward. We'll also retain the services of these various firms throughout a four-month post-go-live period. So Kyanta will be on site, the consultants for project management, training and so forth will be on site and available to us for a 4-month period post go live to address issues, to follow up on training, to basically support us in full for that ramping up period as we get comfortable with the use of this system. Any questions on that before I get to the final recommendations?
On the licensing agreements, they modify and they improve their system year after year, so necessarily they increase their costs. Is there a way to ensure they don't gouge us? Or do you look back at their past increases and see what their licensing agreements
have? If I recall, we have pricing for approximately a 10-year period that was built into the proposals that we received, so we know what those costs are for the next 10 years in that window. Assuming we don't add new features or functionality that doesn't exist today, but that would be part of that decision-making process at the time. So to answer your question, yes, we have those costs. Those are part of our evaluation.
And slide 16, it talks about third-party support, key project roles.
Yes.
Seems like it wasn't too long after I got on the board that we were doing the same program, and we ended up not getting what we thought we were getting and litigated, but it wasn't documented on what we agreed we were supposed to get.
That's right.
And we weren't successful, and it cost us a fortune.
That's right.
I want to make sure that, it talks about project deliverables, that it's documented and agreed upon of what we're expecting to get and that we get that.
That's an excellent point, Director Record. I think Manuel can attest to this by the sheer volume of our statement of work and our deliverables. As Charles mentioned, this solicitation had over 2,500 requirements, and the bidders had to go through and identify with each of those 2,500 requirements whether they met that criteria or not. That was far from in place 10 or 15 years ago when we did that first initiative. Those requirements are incorporated into our contract, the response to that. those product demonstrations that Charles mentioned, 2.5 days on site, where they had to demonstrate their system's ability to do that. They're not buying slideware. We've thoroughly vetted out their ability to match our requirements. And 97% of those 2,500 requirements kind of meets with out-of-the-box functionality. We don't have to do customizations in order to achieve a certain result. So they were a high match for our requirements. All of those documents are incorporated into our contract.
And to Dave's point about upgrades, you said that it's been budgeted for, but is there an agreement about what that's going to cost every year or whenever it's...
So with regard to upgrade, there's a managed services agreement that's part of this contract. I don't know.
Can we just talk about the licensing costs?
Well, the managed services includes what the upgrades that we're going to be doing as part of those services that will be ongoing that are part of this quote.
Okay.
And the other thing I'd just like to mention is on the deliverable side, so many of these computer projects do fail because it hasn't been written in stone, like you're mentioning, and managed a lot of work with us. But also the payment side is tied to the deliverables. And so if they do not execute on the contract, they do not get paid. And so everything's kind of tied together and to make sure that they are honoring the contract and the deliverable.
So, you know, very, very good point. This is a significant project. There are a lot of moving pieces in an effort like this. You know, the difference between now and what was done 10 or 15 years ago, whenever that was, is we have a significant amount of resources that we've put to this project. AAC, the firm that we've hired to develop the requirements and the contract negotiations, and will also be managing the project. As Laura mentioned, they maintain each one of those functional requirements as a gateway, and each step has to be passed before payments made on each of those. So, I'm confident that we're recommending the resources necessary to deliver a successful project. Will there be challenges? Absolutely. No doubt. In an effort like this, there will be challenges. I think we're putting the practices, the tools, the resources in place to meet those.
It's a lot of money, but, you know, we're an agency that does things that takes a lot of work. So our billing system and our tier grades and all that stuff.
To touch on Director Record's point, yes, this is a vital system that we need to keep our agency going, obviously. But I think it might be helpful to come before the board every quarter, whatever, and give maybe an update on where we're at so the board's in tune with how this is going, including if there's hiccups. I think we want to know about some of the hiccups.
Sure.
And
that's a good idea.
So a quarterly update, I think, might be put into the board schedule.
I'll move the item.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
It passes 4-0 with Director Sullivan absent. And I just want to say to the entire staff and Charles and everybody, a good job of getting this going. I look forward to the day that I can go on my computer and play with my portal. So,
thank you.
Well done. Let's do item B and then we'll take a break. How does that sound?
Good. Item C, I think. You want to do item B. D?
Where item B.
B. I'm B. sorry, I thought B. you said D.
No.
My apologies.
Item B, and then we'll take a break. Item B is to approve and authorize a contract for Quail Valley 1 tank for $291,000, Hunter tank for $690,000, Ellis tank for $242,000, interior recoding, an additional appropriation of $1,876,900. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning again. As you're aware, we currently have a large number of water storage tanks. We have 79 that's currently in operation. We have a regular maintenance and inspection program. As part of that program, we dive inspect each one of our tanks on a three-year basis. Based on the results of that condition assessment, we prioritize those tanks that need interior recoding and other improvements. Last year, as a result of our inspection and condition assessment, we prioritized 3 tanks for refurbishment. The Hunter tank in Marietta, the Ellis tank in Meath Valley, and the Quail Valley 1 tank in the community of Quail Valley.
We've retained two engineering firms to assist us in developing the documents to approve those tanks. Kennedy Janks was assigned to Pearl Valley Bank, the Hunter Bank, and Infrastructure Engineering Corporation was assigned to us. So I wanted to give you just a perspective of each one of these facilities that we're going to be working on. The Pearl Valley Tank is a 0.4 million gallon storage facility constructed back in 1975. The Hunter Tank was constructed back in 1971. It's a 2 million gallon storage facility. And then the Ellis Tank is a smaller three tanks, a 250,000 gallons, constructed back in 1959. This provides you a little bit of a perspective on the interior condition of the tanks. And typically, it's the headroom in each tank that is more susceptible to corrosion over the years. And as you can see here, the beams, as well as overflow structures and some of the other interior components, need refurbishment. In working with our consultants, we identified the specific improvements at each one of these facilities that included, in addition to interior recoating of the tank, also perimeter vents. Enhanced ventilation will mitigate the risk of future corrosion on the interior of the tank. Also, safety features will be added to these facilities, including perimeter guard railing along the top of the tanks, and we will also be replacing the cathodic protection system at each one of these tanks. We've worked very closely with water operations to schedule when these tanks will be removed from service so the contractor can access the interior improvements. When these tanks are removed from service, there are other tanks which within each one of these pressure zones that are able to provide service. We schedule the outages during the winter low demand season. All the tanks are anticipated to be completed by end of February of next year. We advertised each one of these tanks for public bid. We're pleased that we received multiple bids on each one of the projects. All three projects, the low bids came in below the engineer's estimate, as indicated on this slide. So our recommendation is to award the construction contracts to the low bidder received on each one of the projects and the appropriation to fund the construction contract as well as inspection services and project management services. The total amount to complete all three tanks is approximately $1.87 million. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the board?
Joe, how long are these new coatings expected to last before they need to be replaced?
Typically, 20 years or more. We will continue to inspect the tanks. Upon installation of the new cathodic protection system, we actually will turn it off. We will not turn it off because we want to see how the new interior coatings perform. The one year mark, because that is still under warranty, we will inspect the tank again with the one year mark. And upon successful completion of that inspection, then we'll turn it off.
I think another thing to point out is this also includes addressing the ventilation system. As Joe said, one of the key areas of corrosion is in the headspace between the water surface and the top of the tank. These older tanks, again, one of them going back to 1959, they do not have contemporary ventilation systems, so that's going to help with the wear of the tanks over time as well.
Absolutely.
Other than just the coatings.
Is there a motion to move the item?
I'll make that motion.
Second. Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
The item passes 4-0 with Director Sullivan absent. With that, we will take a 10-minute break.